impacts the content of To Get Her, because as the production does not want to spotlight this person who now has so much stigma against her, they had to cut out so many of her scenes. They had to cut out an entire eighth, basically, of the show that was filmed. So the series is boring. I'm sorry, but like, from a content perspective, that really is what it is. And so we're watching, when you watch this program, it's like God is testing you. It's like karmic punishment, because it is the same main like three or four people who are just like going through the motions of being really honestly like not that mature in their ways of like handling going through a relationship. Now these people, let's talk about the rest of the cast here, okay? So that was Ziwon, right? The rest of the cast, let's talk about them from oldest to youngest. Oh my lordy lord. There's quite a lot to talk about here. Here we go. Oldest to youngest, Mirang, born 1991, real estate agent and facilities manager. Seoyeon, 1993, an entrepreneur. Also in 1993, we've got Hyung, who is a tattooist. Then we've got Gina, born in 94 or 95, I forgot. Pin on that. She is an essayist and the founder of an AI startup. Okay, anyways, Minu, born 1995. Then we take a little bit of a step down and we meet Tagyo, born in 2000. She works as a radiologist. Finally, we take a nosedive into hell. We pencil dive into a bubbling pit of lava in a volcano. We walk right off the cliff. We've got Hangil, indie singer-songwriter, born in 2006. Take a deep breath. And then scream. Why? 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 And that's it. That's the cast. And then there's the one. That's it. There's nobody else on the show who is around Hunkil's age. Nobody at all. They casted a 19-year-old on this program where everybody else is basically in their 30s. Why? Why? Why was this a good idea? It's weird, okay? Obviously, it's weird for... It's weird because this is a dating show, okay? And then the only viable options that Hangil has are people who are way older than her, right? There's nobody else who is of her age bracket at all. So, when you watch the series, it is deeply uncomfortable watching these women who are in their 30s do one of two things. One, which is the weirder thing, in my opinion, which is they'll go on dates with her. Ugh, okay. Ugh, whatever. And then two, which is not as weird, but kind of hilarious because it's so awkward. People on this cast will be like, oh, Hangil, don't feel so bad that you're so young. You're actually very mature. I don't think that you are too immature at all. And now we gotta watch this 19-year-old. We gotta watch this 19-year-old try to keep up in conversations about love and romance and relationships with these 30-year-olds. I don't know about you, listener. I don't know about you, but I know myself, being a person who has graduated from the age of being 19 many, many years ago, I am a decrepit ancient fossil. I know that when I was 19, and when I wanted people to treat me seriously, I would act like what I think an adult would act like. And then the people who are older than me would be like, ah, interesting. Well, it's good to have that perspective, I guess. Tee hee hee. Oh, she's so cute and endearing. Oh, it's so nice to be that young. She knows nothing of the world. Oh, I'm so endeared. Bro. Ungendered, obviously. What is she doing on this show? Actually, the better question, obviously, to ask, actually, is not so much what she's doing on the show, but where is the responsibility of the producers? In my opinion, it all comes back to the responsibility of the producers. Because when I'm watching this program, a few things are really clear. When you watch the first episode, it's really obvious that Hunkilla is the youngest person in the cast. She looks really young. She, in my opinion, has a baby face. I think anybody would have that opinion, honestly. But she looks really young. And she is obviously feeling a little bit out of place. She's quite reserved and awkward. And a lot of her behavior and thoughts are that of a young person who is in that trajectory in their life where they're still trying to find their footing in the world, but somehow everything in the world revolves around them. And it is not revealed, like, the ages of the cast, it's not revealed until partway through the series, and then it's only even later in the series that we learn that Hangil is the youngest of the cast. Before that, the cast members who share their ages, you know, we're surprised that maybe that there's nobody who is, you know, in their early 20s who's on the cast. But we still don't know Hangil's age. Maybe she just looks really young for her age, right? And she just acts a certain way. It's only halfway through the series where we learn that she is indeed, she's basically a college freshman. Why is this a thing? What should have happened, obviously, from the producers is that they should have casted more people who are of Hangil's age. Because, and here's the kicker, and here's why I think they purposefully casted her for a beat of drama is because throughout the series, Hangil expresses her discomfort of knowing that everybody is older than her. There's literally a scene, again, so sad and actually really so sad and kind of funny because it's so sad, but also funny because it's so uncomfortable. There's literally a part in this series where Hangil has a little bit of a meltdown and she's talking to Sayeon and she's like, you know, I don't even know why I'm here. I just never would have imagined that, like, the age gap between me and everybody else would be so big. And she's like having such a hard time. And Sayeon's just sitting there like, oh, well, you know, I don't think that you're a child. Lord, what have I done? What have I done? Is in the boyfriend, right? Like, there were also young cast members. I think the youngest guy on the boyfriend, that Netflix Japan series that I really liked, I think the youngest guy there was 21, but that was remedied because there were other guys his age who were on the show who were like 22, 23, so he had understandable, viable options. And and he pursued them fully. He was like pursuing people who were around his age. Hangil, like, she's flattered by the attention of these older women, but it's obvious that when you feel so incredibly out of place with these other people because they're so different in age than you, that you would feel uncomfortable being there. And the thing that is upsetting to me is whenever this is mentioned in the program, the show producers like to frame it as Hangil is so mature. Hangil is so brave because she is so young and she has this young wisdom to her, and yet she is able to feel comfortable to live openly and out as a lesbian. And the other members of the cast, they really applaud her for this as well. Like, genuinely, I think they're very touched by the fact that Hangil is so young and feels like she can be in a place where she is out and wants to be a bit of a role model to other young lesbians who are struggling. I love that. That genuinely, obviously, is very beautiful. That point, though, would have been driven home so much better if there were also other young lesbians on the show or other young sapphics on the show. And there is none. There is only Hangil. It makes me wonder, the level of, neglect and just, no thoughts, smooth brain that these producers have when it comes to casting and producing this show. It makes me wonder, is this karmic punishment? Is this genuinely did I do something in a past life to deserve a show that I've been waiting my entire life for that is just so poorly done? Or is it just straight misogyny? How is this possible? Is it truly Leslie, you really wanted this, but you're not gonna get it? You're always gonna get a mid thing because you were a mid person in your past life? Or is it truly producers being we've got queer people, just send in whatever, just send in whoever, and we're just gonna make the hurdle of everything on this show to not be as good, because women, lesbians, queer women, bisexual, pansexual women, even aro women who want to see queer women falling in love, they don't deserve, they think that they have liberated themselves from the patriarchy by living true to their authentic selves, but let's throw a little wrench in their plans. Let's just go ahead and do that. It's like, why? What? No, please. It is so hard being a woman. Genuinely, it is so hard being a woman. Straight up. But, I can't even get, a good sapphic television show starring people who kind of look like me. Oh my god. Why? Why? Was this Eve's punishment? Is that what it is? Ugh. Here's a bird note. Splice it up a little bit. Enjoy.
This is Bird Note. Crows play many roles in human cultures, from ominous tricksters to sacred purveyors of wisdom. But for much of American history, the social stigma around crows lent itself to a more pejorative meaning, says attorney and playwright Alice T. Crow.
The crow is a very beautiful creature, very knowledgeable, very intelligent, but in the context of the system of racism, the crow is black, is ugly, is something to be feared. And so the word crow was used to describe color. We were called crows, and the image of the crow lynched upside down was used to intimidate us.
When Alice began looking into her family's history with the Crow surname, she discovered a deep historical connection between the racist symbology of Jim Crow and the negative image of these birds in many Western cultures, a particular irony given Black people's history with crows pre-enslavement.
Crow in Africa is a bird that was sacred. We learn from the crow. The crow is part of our culture. Even the remnants of culture that people think we didn't hold on to from the African experience, crow gave us that. We held on to that.
For example, in some West African societies, crows symbolize wisdom and leadership, and their movements inspired dances. While they were later appropriated and mocked by the Jim Crow caricature, Alice doesn't let this taint her outlook on the bird.
Crows look at each other, and they look at themselves, and they see beauty. They don't see ugly. They don't see feeble-minded and something to be mocked. They don't always get along. But for the most part, they look out for each other. They mourn the death of each other. They defend each other. So when they look at each other, they see themselves and they love themselves. And I think that's something that we can learn from their behavior.
To learn more about Alice and her documentary project, Our Name is Crow, go to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. Hope you enjoyed that bird note. I certainly really did. I love hearing stories like that, especially, obviously, on Bird Note, because I love that series. I'm Leslie, and today I'm talking about a series I don't love called To Get Her, which is Korea's first ever sapphic dating reality show. I know, To Get Her is a wild title, and if it were not a pun, it would sound like a threat. But it is actually supposed to be a pun, though I think that it is actually a threat to my personal mental well-being and soundness, because watching the show is, oh my god, it's so much, but mostly the irresponsibility of the producers is even worse, drives me up a wall, which is why this episode of Typically Tuesdays has been rant heavy with music in the background instead of actually happening while we're in the middle of talking. Watching this show, on the surface, it does seem like it's just like a regular kind of like reality dating series where emotions are really, really heightened. And there are just like a lot of different people on the program that, you know, maybe are just not all that good at communicating, really need to have to work on themselves a lot as well. But then you learn about the stuff that's happening after filming and the fact that the cast members, the girls are fighting. And no, that's really horrible actually, because there's some really bad stuff happening off after shooting. One of the cast members, to break it down for you, basically, at this point, when I found out about the further behind the scenes garbage that's going on for about this program, I was already 12 episodes deep. I had already spent more than 12 hours watching the show. I had already received text messages from my friend who I had been live texting things about the show to. I'd already received a response from her that was like, you never seem to have anything positive to say about the show. Like, why are you watching it? And then I find out about this. So throughout the series, there is a cast member named Gina and a cast member named Hyung who are involved with each other for the first couple of episodes. Then it turns out they just don't really have the same dating style. And Hyung is kind of like, you know, I appreciate the time that we spent together, but I don't think that this is going to work out. And Gina gets very upset. You know, she's like, on any other dating show, it's like, yeah, you're being put into this, like, kind of vulnerable situation. Dating is, like, very personal, you know, and when you experience rejection, it can feel pretty horrible, right? And especially in a situation where, like, you're getting boozed up all the time, they're not letting you sleep because you had to film a bunch, they're probably not even feeding you very well, it's pretty crappy. But Gina, you know, ends up talking about on the show how she's experiencing flashbacks from a traumatic time in her childhood where she was getting ostracized and bullied by people who she thought were her friends. And how Hyung's rejection kind of reminds her of that. She begins kind of like isolating herself and just like generally kind of bopping around in a not very like spirited way anymore. She was like very bubbly in the beginning and now she's like obviously going through it. But you know, this kind of thing, it happens, right? This is like storyline in reality television, unfortunately. But then you begin to realize, because you, as in me, are going through the discussion forums on Reddit, and you find out that Gina has been basically openly slandering and libeling Hyung post-production, being like, she was like getting everybody to try to ostracize me, and she was conspiring against me. And then you realize, okay, yet another issue that production could have easily avoided if they gave these people psych evaluation. Listen, obviously Gina's going through something really horrible, and I want the best for her. I want her to like feel secure in who she is. I want her to be able to like, you know, move through life happily. But now she's like out here slandering people, and it's like, bro, why is this happening? Watching the show, it just kind of feels like Gina's really, really intense. Like, she, you know, is moving really, really fast in her relationship with Hyung. Like, finding out about this stuff afterwards, it's like bullying and manipulation and gaslighting. Obviously, we don't see everything that happens on the that happens in the program and stuff, based on how the story, you know, how the producers want the story to flow. And we don't see behind the scenes, and we don't know what's happening between these two people after shooting, or even when the cameras aren't on. But it is a lot to be claiming that like I was being bullied on set by my fellow castmate, and there was apparently no support for that. Producers of To Get Her, may I ask you, what makes you feel like you can make this series without feeling you have some responsibility to your cast to make sure that they are doing okay before, during, and after shooting? What makes you feel as though that you can just allow the stuff to happen after shooting while your show is being broadcast, which puts your cast members in vulnerable positions where they could get dogpiled and harassed online and potentially lose employment opportunities, potentially like lose just like general like favoritism and likability in public life? What makes you feel that way? Because when I hear about a person who feels like she was bullied during this production and then she has to go online to disclose it, I'm thinking two things. I'm thinking, number one, this person, if these claims are true, really, really needs support. Number two, if these claims are not true, still really, really needs support. And these people are just out here doing this dang thing. Originally, as I said, like, I, watching the show, I'm just annoyed by these people. Now, watching this series, having finished it, by the way, I did end up finishing it. I don't know if you would want to, if you watch it, but I did end up finishing To Get Her. Again, a threat. And they got me. They got me good. Because I thought that this was going to be a good show. I thought this was going to be a good series. I thought that, you know, the stuff that happened in and out of production was going to be chill. right? Like, obviously, you know, like, not to compare it to Drag Race, but obviously to compare it to Drag Race, like, even Drag Race has psych evals now, because people will go onto the show and they'll do something before, during, or after the program, and then there needs to be some kind of, like, damage control that is actually coming from a place of care and coming from a place where the person who is experiencing whatever thing that they're experiencing can be supported throughout this particularly difficult and strange time in their life where they become a public figure. Why is that not happening on this program? Like, the past couple of years, I don't know, like, in the West, like, it's been really, really important for reality television producers to have that kind of, like, network of support for their cast, like, before, during, and after. Like, you do, like, a psych evaluation, you film the show, you offer, like, you know, resources for your cast members and stuff like that. You want to be able to step in when there's anything big that's going down and that type of thing. And you do whatever you can to support the members of your cast. With that being said, watching this show and knowing about how, in my opinion, poorly a lot of things were handled throughout, before, and after, it's like being the victim of cannibalism. Like, I feel like I'm being eaten by my own people, right? Like, like, when they say to get her, that's what they mean. They got me. They got me, they bonked me on the head, that now they're going to cook me and eat me, because this is so hard to get through this entire experience. The final thing that I want to say as we wrap up today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is that on the surface, To Get Her feels like it's, when you watch it, it feels like it's about media representation, right? Finally, like, this group, this community of people that have often been marginalized and underrepresented or presented in a bad light are finally getting some time in the spotlight and being presented in a positive way. But when you find out about all of the stuff that happened before, during, and after production, just how poorly D1 scandal was handled, just how poorly casting was handled, just the potential idea that there were no psych evals and no mental health resources or anything like that distributed during or after the production, it's not just about media representation anymore. It becomes also about the responsibility of the storyteller and to the extent in which they take it upon themselves to be accountable to the people who they want to apparently spotlight. Remember that this show was filmed over the course of 7 days, and there are 14 about an hour long episodes in this whole series, excluding like bonus content. That is so much filming. The cast of the show, they are workers for the producers. When they are filming, they are workers for the producers when they are promoting the program as well. And unfortunately, because of the way that our society thinks about marginalized peoples, the cast of the show now all bear the burden of being representations of lesbians in Korea. Now that is how they're going to be viewed, that is how they're going to be embraced, and that's going to be how they're scrutinized. It is the responsibility of the producers to take care of their cast. And if they are truly claiming like they want to uplift lesbian voices, they want to uplift lesbian communities in Korea, then they actually have to show up and they actually have to take care of their lesbians. But I don't see that happening in To Get Her. And for me, as an East Asian lesbian, as somebody who's been wanting to see a production like this for so long, it is incredibly disappointing. And that's it. That's today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you watched To Get Her, write in. I'm at Typically Tuesdays on Instagram. And if you didn't watch To Get Her, consider yourself spared. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM. I'll talk to you very soon.